Have you signed up to my free online course on mental health and Chinese medicine? This is something I'm so passionate about because acupuncture is fantastic when it comes to mental health. You know this and I know this because acupuncture actually puts patients in a parasympathetic state, which allows them to calm down, which we know in our world today, everyone is stressed and everybody needs to be out of that fight or flight state that everybody is constantly in. So get your free course, go to acupoacademy.com/mental and sign up. You'll learn the basics of mental health and TCM, the 5 personalities and their impact on our health, the 7 emotions and their TCM patterns and symptoms, effective treatment protocol for all those 7 emotions as well. No fluff, no boring lectures, just actionable tips to help you change the lives of your patients. And it's 100% free. Go to acupoacademy.com/mental and sign up today. What's your favorite flavor of food? Are you a sweet tooth? Do you like salty, bitter, sour, spicy? Are you a little spicy? I think I'm a bit spicy, but that might be more my personality than my food. I love good food, but at the same time, I am really passionate about sharing online specifically the amazing benefits of Chinese medicine nutrition. And so today my guest is Dr. Melissa Carr. She has written a book, Modern Chinese Medicine Food Cures, all on TCM nutrition. And today we're going to talk about everything from mindfulness eating to adapting to who we are, to each patient, to making food easy, to having fun with food, but also to make it easy on the patient by adding food that would help their whole health instead of subtracting or taking away because nobody likes to lose. So with that in mind, we're going to have a great time today. If you are eating, enjoy. If not, you might be hungry by the end of this episode. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome to AcuPro, a show dedicated to making Chinese medicine and acupuncture easy to grasp and fun to learn. Hi, I'm your host, Clara Cohen. I support practitioners and students like you in changing the world one patient at a time. My goal is to share my passion for TCM and empower you to achieve superior patient care. I love to showcase the amazing benefits of acupuncture because, after all, acupuncture rocks. Welcome to the AcuPro Show, Dr. Melissa Carr. I am so excited you're here because I've been a big fan of yours for many years. If you're listening to this and you are in Vancouver, you probably have heard of Dr. Carr. She's been publishing articles on the Alive magazine, which is a big free magazine in Vancouver. For those who are listening and are not in our area, in Vancouver, we have this amazing magazine that is all about natural health, integrative health. And she has written articles for this magazine for a long time. And I've been following her writing, her career, and she's been practicing. She's going into her 25th year in practice. So she's got a lot of experience in her little box. And today specifically, I wanted her to come on the show to talk about Chinese medicine nutrition because it's one of my favorite subjects. So welcome to the show, Dr. Carr.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited. I've also been following you and the wonderful information that you're sharing about Chinese medicine. I love your passion for it and the way that you present it, making it so accessible.
Thank you so much. You just published a book that I want to talk about. I want to step back. You've been practicing for a long time. You and I went to the same TCM college in Vancouver. And when you started practicing, were you already fascinated or excited about Chinese medicine nutrition as part of TCM? Everybody thinks, oh, acupuncture. And then some people are like, oh, there's herbs too. And then eventually people know that it's about cupping maybe and some moxa and some other tools. But for some reason, nutrition doesn't seem to be a big thing. So I'm so glad you wrote a book about it because it's so important that we share and we educate the world about what are the possibilities of TCM nutrition. So were you already passionate about it from the get-go or that came with time? Tell me a bit your journey when it comes to that specific part of TCM.
Absolutely. No, it was not part of my starting point. I had a degree in kinesiology and I was thinking I was pursuing sports medicine. So mostly I was headed towards the acupuncture direction when I found out about Chinese medicine. So first I was going towards Western medicine, sports medicine, lived in Japan for a couple of years, did research in a Western medical university there. And just my perspective about health and life changed by living in Japan over that time. And when I came back, I found Chinese medicine and started studying it. I had never experienced any Chinese medicine practice prior to my enrolling in a school. I just knew that it made sense to me. And the system was so beautiful, and I wanted to learn more about it. So I started studying it. And of course, acupuncture, as you said, is one of the key first points of it. I thought that I was really going to be focusing on the acupuncture part, thinking I'm going to be in sports medicine. And then the herbs part just really drew me in. And then the nutrition part. Now, I will say that the foundation for me is that I love food. I'm not a good cook. And my family knows, don't ask me to make anything complicated. I'm too impatient as a cook. I can put stuff together, but I'm really quite impatient about it. But the beauty of Chinese medicine with regard to food, if you're studying Chinese herbs, you understand Chinese foods as well. If you understand how Chinese medicine approaches food, you understand how it approaches herbs. The more I studied, then starting to practice, the more intriguing that part became for me. It grew on me. Both my parents have been educators in the past. So for me, the education piece of teaching people something that they can do. And so I can't teach them, obviously, to do acupuncture on themselves. I don't want them to be prescribing Chinese herbal formulas for themselves, but I could certainly teach them how to eat. So that for me was where the nutrition part really started to grow on me.
I love that you said I can teach people, because it's all about educating the world and what they can do for themselves, because this is sometimes the problem we have, is that in North America specifically, people have been used to go see the medical practitioner, you give me the solution, and that's it. For us, it's education, right? Yes, we can do acupuncture. Yes, we can give you herbs. We can give you treatment. But we also want you to make some lifestyle changes. You have to be part of this team to help you. We can't just do all the work for you. So I love the education piece. That leads to my first question to you before we start talking in depth about nutrition. I found in practice, and I think a lot of practitioners have a hard time, is that compliancy. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I could tell you what is best for you when it comes to lifestyle, nutrition. It'd be great if you don't have a green smoothie every morning in winter in Canada and all those kind of things. But how do you get the compliance from patients? Do you have any strategies? Because I found often the hardest part for most people in life is to change their eating habits because they've been ingrained in them for so long. I moved from France here, and the first time I went to the store, I had no idea that there was an entire aisle of cereal because I was not raised on cereal. And I was so shocked. And there was another entire aisle on chips. And I wasn't raised on that. We drank water. We didn't drink pop or anything. You said food. I love food, but I love real food. French food is very rich. Fair enough. Can be a lot of dampness from that, but it's real food. We have real ingredients, right? So I feel like in North America, when I move here, a lot of people are so used to eat cereal in the morning. And then when they eat cereal, they're like, oh, I saw on the internet that it's better to have a smoothie. So I'm going to have a green smoothie because it's full of vitamins and nutrients. So how do you start with strategies for patients to actually be able to follow your advice?
I think it's inquiring where they are. So I ask, what do you like to eat? What don't you like to eat? How important is food to you? Do you have questions? I do make a lot of recommendations for nutrition. Every single patient I see does get nutritional recommendations. Even a patient coming in with an ankle sprain, something acute, I'm still going to give the food recommendations. And I really say, it's really up to you about whether or not you apply it. But I do let them know that I do think that their health is based off of a foundation. And I think of it like a table with four legs. So if you have a rectangular or square table, if you have less than four legs, it's not a very balanced table. And for me, those four legs of foundation are nutritious food, regular movement, so exercise, sufficient restful restorative sleep, and joyful activities. And I say, I can help you with the recommendations for food and ways to improve your sleep hygiene and for movement activities or specific exercises. I can tell you what I do for joyful activities. I say, but these, they're up to you. So I do tell them, I can prescribe these things, I can do the treatments, but if you want to enhance it, then my goal is to have you employ these pieces. And if you have questions about it, let's have a dialogue. So I do have some patients who they come in and I look at what they're eating and I'm like, yeah, I don't really have much to offer you. I'm still going to give my recommendations because maybe there's some tweaks or maybe there's an expansion on the foods that you're choosing from. Because I think that's where a lot of people are afraid. They're afraid that you're going to take away their favorite foods. And so I start with, what can we add? Okay, you love having the smoothies in the morning and you're not willing to change that yet. Would you add some warming spices to those smoothies? How about if you add some cinnamon and ginger, those kinds of things? And how do we add to it? And make sure that, okay, maybe after that, you have your smoothie, but maybe you have a ginger tea afterwards so that you can support your body, or before you have the smoothie. How do we stoke that digestive fire? I think that is the way that I approach it and see where they're at and see what they're willing to do. And I remind them too also that food should be enjoyable. So they don't want to eat things that they're not going to enjoy. And so I say, what are the things that you like? And how do we bridge? If it's far away from where your ideal is, how do we find a bridge that you can start that crossing over toward that direction? And I also tell people, you're never going to be at 100%. The goal is not perfection. And it's going to change as well. Same like the Chinese herbal formulas. It's not going to be the same every season and throughout their life passage. So that's really my starting point with them. And you can tell those who are interested in and those who are feeling resistant. One case study that I like to share of a person who was very resistant to change. So this patient was on a raw cold food diet. So she had a lot of spleen yang deficiency. All of this stuff was coming up as yang deficiency, spleen predominantly yang deficiency and also some kidney yang deficiency. And I said, we can do the acupuncture, we can do the herbs. And she was vegan as well. And she was very passionate about it. She had built a whole community around that. And I said, I don't want to take that away from you, but I feel like we need to look at how can we tweak it to work for you? Because the people that you're talking to that it's working for live in a warm climate, and that's not where we are. And so I said, can you just try this for a week? I said, continue to eat a vegan diet, but let's try adding in cooked herbs for 1 week and then see how you feel. And she came back after that week mad at me because she felt better. And she was afraid she was going to lose her community. And I was like, I'm not telling you need to do this 100% of the time, but now you have information about what will work for your body and you can make a choice. It was so funny because she was so upset, but she really realized that's why she was upset, was she really realized it, she was going to have to make a change.
Yeah. And I could see that if it's her entire being, it's more than just you going, oh, I'm going to try the raw diet. This is her passion and she's helping other people with it. So I could see being so difficult, right? But I love your approach. First of all, by adding versus stop eating this, stopping in that, and people are like, what? I can't have my favorite. So I think it's really good to say, okay, what can we add? Like adding that ginger tea, which I'm having right now. It's exactly ginger turmeric. That's what I'm having right now, even though it's a beautiful day in BC in Vancouver area, but it's still cool. It's still winter. And I like that you talk about the different time in life, because when I was younger, I was much more on the cool side because I had a tendency to be more blood deficient. And so I needed warm food. Now that I'm past menopause, I'm warmer all the time. So I can have more cooling food. In summer, I have salads and they feel good and they don't feel like, okay, this is awful. And it's funny you say that because I think with your story, I have a similar, different story, but similar is that you can tell people to try something and then they can decide because they can see both sides. And I think that's the best way to go about it. Because I remember having students, you start teaching a class to a brand new year, brand new student. It's the first day, first class on the foundation of TCM. And you have this girl in front of me that's sitting there and Her coat is on, her scarf is on, her hat is on, and she's holding her smoothie and listening to me while drinking this green smoothie. And everybody else in the room, they don't have their coat on. It's just sweatshirt or whatever. And I remember we start talking about yin and yang, cold and hot. So I said, I'm going to target you. What's your name? And she told me her name. And I'm like, don't take it personally, but you're having a smoothie right now. You look like you're freezing, because she's all covered. She's, oh my gosh, I'm always cold. I'm always cold. And she's holding the smoothie like for dear life. And I said to her, have you ever tried in the morning something warm? Let's say tomorrow morning or this week, try once. Maybe some warm quinoa with some cinnamon and maple syrup, and eat that and some walnuts or some seeds or whatever you want to add up in it, and see how you feel after versus how you feel the morning of the smoothie. And it's exactly like you. The next week when I came back, she was like, Clara, I had no idea. And that's the thing. She was in her head, just like your patient. She was thinking, what I'm doing is good for me. It's healthy for me. So that was a great story. And that takes me to my next question for you that I was thinking about in your book. So Dr. Carr just published a book called Modern Chinese Medicine Food Cures, because that's when we go in TCM perspective, we look at this as cures because food is medicine. So I love the title. And in your book, you not only talk about TCM, but you also talk about Western, right? It's like putting the two together. How do you reconcile that? Because so many people, like your patient, will say smoothies are good for you and salads are good for you because they're full of nutrients, they're raw. I'm not losing all the nutrients by overcooking it, et cetera, et cetera. And so you come in and you're like, okay, depends, because we all different. And so what works for you, like you said to them, it doesn't work for somebody else. So we have to adapt. And that's a problem I have with the Western nutrition. Like Western medicine, it's one size fits all most of the time. Unless, you know, you have a disorder and you're trying to treat, let's say, diabetes and you have to do it a certain way. But in general, it's like you said, it's whole food. It's eating at regular hours. It's not overeating. It's having a balanced meal with all the protein, the carbs, the fat, etc. But it doesn't take in consideration each individual. So that's the strength of TCM. Here's the truth. Your patients are already taking supplements. They're Googling, they're following influencers that have no clinical experience, and then they come to you for answers. This is why I ask Dr. Alex to create the integrative guide to vitamins and nutrients. This is not just about vitamins and minerals. This is about deepening your practice, building trust with your patients, and expanding your ability to provide true integrative care. This course is designed specifically for practitioners like you who want to bridge the gap between Chinese medicine and functional medicine in order to provide amazing patient care. This is an online pre-recorded course, so you can go at your own pace. You get 4.5 hours of continuing education and a certificate after you pass a quiz, and a 7-day money-back guarantee so you cannot lose. Don't wait. Invest in this course today. The link is below for you. So in the book, how do you go about reconciling the opposite advice people would get from Chinese medicine versus Western nutrition?
I think if somebody's come in and they've seen, say, for example, a naturopath or a dietitian or a holistic nutritionist, and they've been given nutritional advice, the first question I usually ask is, how is that working for you? How is it going? And if it's working and they feel good, then I can say, well, you know, maybe I'll add some things to it just to tweak it up a little bit. I'm not going to take away, and feel free to try it. And then if sometimes they say, actually, I feel worse or I'm not better, it's not helping me. And I say, okay, would you be willing to try a different perspective? And traditional Chinese medicine really personalizes it. The shortest chapter in my book is on diets. I think it's one paragraph because I don't want people to think that there is one diet that's going to work for everyone. I've seen panels where there's vegan and carnivore, and they're talking about how this way of eating has saved their lives. And I'm like, I believe you. But each one of you, that worked for you. Doesn't mean it's going to work for everybody. That's why people say, well, how does one person tell me one thing, somebody else tells me an entirely different diet is suitable who am I supposed to listen to? I think that is the beauty of Chinese medicine. It's what works for you. There is no one perfect diet. Diet is a four-letter word that sometimes we just need to leave it. We need to drop that from our idea and think more like, what are we developing our relationship with food? I think of our experience with food as a relationship, and it changes based off of what's going on for us at the time and based off of the season and our time in life. I do think it's important for Chinese medicine practitioners to have a fundamental understanding of nutrition from the carbohydrates, proteins, fats, the macronutrients, as well as the micronutrients of vitamins and minerals. You know, when people talk about the cooking destroys the enzymes of the fruits and vegetables, and so I don't want to destroy the enzymes because that helps with the digestion. I said, but do you know that the breakdown of that is it's also breaking it down so it's easier to digest? I say you've had that experience probably in your life where, unless you've got very strong digestion, if you have digestive weakness and you have that raw salad, and then you notice, you know, after a bowel movement, that there is pieces of food that you can identify, it means your body did not do a very good job of digesting that. Whereas soups and stews, things that are cooked, they generally are more easily digested. So people have had this experience themselves. That is the way that I reconcile the Western and the TCM way of thinking about nutrition, is they don't work against each other. They're both, the thing that is common for both of them generally is variety of foods, and that it does depend on your own situation to some degree, and that moderation is often recommended by nutrition on both sides as well.
I was in the fitness industry before I went back to do TCM, and then my first year in school, I was in school and still working in the fitness industry part-time to pay for all my expenses and life expenses. So that was really great. However, coming from a fitness background, we ate a lot of salads because this was nutrition, this was nutrients. And so I remember started school and it was lunchtime in that tiny little kitchen we had at school. And I would bring my massive bowl with a salad full of raw vegetables, so many, like peppers and mushroom and lettuce and spinach, and everything was in there. And because it was easier, I would put tofu because, let's say, fish doesn't keep as long. So this was easy when you're running around between school and work. And so I would put tofu. And I remember Dr. Lu Fong, who was one of my teachers, came passed by in the kitchen and looked at my salad and looked at me and yelled, "You, no more salad," right? But yelled at me like this. And then I was like, what's this problem? I hadn't done food cures yet. I hadn't learned the nutrition. My first year, right? And every day he would see me with a salad. He would just yell at me and tell me no more salad. I was like, this guy is so weird. What's his problem? And wouldn't you know, he teaches us food cures. And then within the first day, I was like, oh, this is why I'm always bloated, no matter how much and good food I eat and how well I eat, I'm always so bloated. And I was like, oh, and so that changed everything. But that's the thing, right? It's that knowledge of the Western nutrition, because I have a bachelor in applied nutrition. So I knew my macros, my micros, all my stuff. So I'm like, I'm having a balanced meat. I put olive oil in there. Like, it's got fat, it's got carbs, fiber, it's got everything, nutrients, everything. It's a beautiful salad. It's colorful. But yeah, in Vancouver in winter, and I learned better. And now it's very much something that I also like to share with patients, is like, are you listening to your body? Are you listening to your insides? Because your intuition, when you eat something, how you feel after tells you, oh yeah, so that wasn't great for me. Let's try something a little bit, adapt to what the intuition is. And that is really hard. I don't know if it's a man, woman thing. I'm not sure, but that's really hard for my husband, because he'll say, oh, let's do this. I'm like, no, it doesn't feel right now. I want to do this because I want to follow my intuition and what my body needs. He has a hard time with that. Anyway, that's, I figure I share that. So one of the questions I had for you, and then I want to talk about your book, but my last question was, in TCM perspective, I always think, okay, let's guide the patients to eat in season, to eat local food, because that's also a Western way of eating better, not food that comes from so far away, or watermelon in winter, which makes no sense to me because it's winter, and that's not a fruit that is meant for winter. So in season, more local, like you said, whole food, really good nourishing food that is real food, like we talked about. One of the things that I've seen over my 20 plus of years of practice, because I live in Canada, is that I see a lot of people from different ethnic backgrounds. And you do too, obviously, because we live in Canada. So in North America, because it's such a new kind of country, a lot of people immigrate from somewhere else, like I did. I immigrated from France, and I'm first generation. There are patients of mine that are second generation or third generation, depending where their family immigrated to Canada. And one of the things that I noticed and that I started to tell patients, and you could tell me if you really agree or if you don't see any correlation, but I'm like, okay, so you are first or second generation from Korea, and probably drinking lots of milk might not be the best for you, because in Korea, that's not part of the diet. So for me, as being French, I have to be careful with super spicy food, because that's not something we do a lot. So when I went to India, I had to be really careful. Although I love chai, I have to be careful because my body is, you were not born in India. You're French. So I do much better with things that are from my background, which is Mediterranean. So goat cheese and a lot of chickpeas and those kind of things. I see patients that, you know, the background, let's say another one would be from Germany. They definitely wouldn't do well with Thai food because it's very bland German food. Or people, like I said, from certain countries in Asia, they don't do dairy. So when they come to North America, all that milk is just not agreeing with them. Do you talk to your patients about this as well?
I do. When I have a visit with a patient, I ask them what they're eating and what's their standard. And regarding the dairy component, the majority of the world does not digest lactose well. So the ones who do digest it well are, I think it's 20% of the world's population has the sufficient enzymes of lactase to digest past the breastfeeding. I think that having the information about what people eat, and usually if they are first generation, they're eating a lot of the foods that they would have grown up with that might be culturally more relevant. So for example, somebody from India who eats a lot of hot, spicy foods, if they've got a lot of stomach fire, I might be like, can we pull that hot, spicy back and still enjoy the flavor? So we still have those conversations about whether it's the foods that they're choosing that are culturally relevant, are they working for them now? We don't grow tropical fruits here. I wish we did, because I go to countries where it's grown and I'm like, oh my God, the first time I went to Thailand and had a banana, I was like, I don't think I've eaten a banana in my life. I think this is the first time I've actually tried a banana, something so simple. I went to Greece, I had a Greek salad with black olives. And I was like, I hate black olives, but I don't. Apparently I love black olives, but only there. I don't love them when they're here, even if I get it from a Greek market. So I think that the food part, the cultural context still comes into play. Our biology doesn't change super fast. And so some of us have digestive enzymes that work better towards one type of food or one type of diet. And when we travel, we notice this. So when we travel to another country and we eat foods that we're not used to, our digestive system gets a little, and I think that it's important to recognize that, but not be entirely stuck on it at the same time, because it's possible that what they would normally have eaten in the past may not be relevant for where they are. Like if they've been eating tons of tropical fruit in Malaysia and then they come here and they continue to eat the same tropical fruit, it may not work if they're in the Northern Hemisphere in a colder climate.
That totally makes sense. So I totally get that. Again, that's going back to what is working for you at this stage right now. It's all about treating the patient as a whole and that specific patient for them. So I appreciate you sharing that. So Modern Chinese Medicine Food Cure is the book you published last year, but it's new. It's your brand new book. We'll have the link for everyone below. Can you tell me why you wrote this book and a little bit more about the book itself and who did you write it for?
I was trying to figure out how long it took me to write this. And I want to say 15 years. It's possible it was longer. It was just been something that you do in little bits and pieces. And the reason why I wrote it was because I felt there wasn't an English book on Chinese medicine food cures that kind of worked from a Western understanding of it that was current. I'm not saying that there's nothing. I just felt like there wasn't anything that was comprehensive enough when I started this journey. And I wrote the book that I thought that I would have wanted as a student. So I have it here. When I first got it.
It's beautiful. Thank you. Beautiful.
When I first got it, I honestly thought it would be a lot bigger because I spent 15 years writing this thing. How is this thing relatively small? It's dense, though. I felt like there was a gap. I wanted it for the Chinese medicine students so that they could have an understanding of the foundation piece, how the food cures is interpreted. I wanted it for the TCM student and the TCM practitioner to also understand a little bit about the Western nutrition part. Just as you were working in the fitness industry when you were doing your studies and you started practicing, I worked at a health food store, natural health food store, selling supplements while I was, and I saw that there wasn't necessarily a lot of knowledge and training in my TCM part about the macronutrients and the micronutrients. And so I wanted a book that covered that as the foundational piece. And so people could think about things like, what are common symptoms for a vitamin B12 deficiency? Who might experience a vitamin B12 deficiency? What are the different types of the forms of the minerals? What are they bound to? So when somebody comes in and they're taking supplements, that the TCM practitioner or TCM student would have some foundational knowledge in that. And then I wanted something that I could also give to my patients because I'm always making nutritional recommendations. So I want something that I can say, that section here, turn to this page. So I could have a little bit ease in my practice where I'm just like, yeah, it's here. Go there, and that's where you're going to follow that. I could go and say, you've got spleen qi deficiency. Go to the section on spleen qi deficiency and look that up. It's a bit of a publisher's nightmare, perhaps, because it's not super narrow, the market that I was going for. I felt that people who are interested in this have enough basic knowledge that it wouldn't go over their heads, even if they've never studied Chinese medicine, even if they've never studied Western nutrition. I felt like it was possible to give information people could easily apply.
Before we continue with today's episode, I want to share something that honestly feels like a big moment for me. If you've been following me for a while, you know I've always said no to all sponsorships. I've been approached many times, but I turn them all down because if I don't genuinely use a product or love it, I will never recommend it to you. But today is different. I am super excited to introduce my very first sponsor. Drumroll, please. Jane App. I'm also a Jane ambassador, so this is a company I actually use and love. I am saying yes because I've used Jane for years in my own multidisciplinary clinic. Truly, it's the best practice management software and electronic medical record I've ever worked with. Before Jane, we were using a clunky system that made everything harder than it needed to be. When we switched, the entire clinic felt the difference immediately. Jane is built by people who actually understand what it's like to be a practitioner running a busy practice. One of my favorite features is online booking. There is nothing better than waking up and seeing patients booking their own appointment while I was asleep. Your patients can book when it works for them, and the waitlist feature fills last-minute cancellations automatically. I love that. I used to spend so much time calling 8 to 10 people just to fill up one spot. Jane also automates the things we never enjoy doing, like intake forms, reminders, confirmation. It honestly feels like having an extra assistant handling all the moving parts so you can focus on what really matters, which is supporting your patients and being the TCM rockstar practitioner you truly are. There are so many features I could talk about, but we would be here all day. If you're looking for a system that brings more ease, more clarity, and calm into your practice, I truly recommend Jane. You can check it out at jane.app/demo. And because you're part of the AcuPro community, you can use my code AcuPro1MO, 1 month, when you sign up to get a 1 month grace period on your new account. The link and the code are also in the show notes below for you. Now let's get back to today's episode. That's great because you want to appeal to as many people as possible, because the idea is, like we said, we all have to eat. So might as well eat to nourish the body. So that's great. So I wanted to ask you, just for everybody that's listening, just for fun, what are your go-to two best food for spleen chi deficiency, since you mentioned that, and that's such a common pattern. And for the people that are listening, if you're not sure, that's basically you have a weak digestion, you easily fatigue, you have probably cravings, you're feeling tired mentally probably as well as physically, you worry, maybe you overthink, there's a bit of loose stools in your digestive tracts. So those are the basics. There's more to it, but we could start with that. Give us an idea.
Absolutely. So for a lot of people with spleen chi deficiency, it could be because they're overeating. They maybe have quite a strong sweet tooth and they're overwhelming their spleen with too much sweet and damp foods. And when I was first studying, so just as you were having the salads, I thought I was eating healthy because I would go get a blueberry bran muffin and a this is going to date the time, a Snapple or a Fruitopia, which what I thought, okay, fruit juice, it's healthy. And so those are the foods that I was having when I started studying. And then I realized, oh, this is like really not good for me. The replacement for the muffin for me, I do have a sweet tooth and I love sweet. And I also love the texture of a muffin. So for me, sweet potatoes roasted, I could eat that as a snack. It makes me happy. I don't feel like I'm missing out when I have that. I recognize, of course, I don't need a lot of it, but there's a lot of fiber in there too. So I don't necessarily have to have very much of that. And I add a little bit of cinnamon to help balance the blood sugar and enhance the sweetness flavor there. And ginger is just to nourish this stomach chi and clear out some of the dampness as well. So I'd say those would be two go-to foods that I would choose because I feel like they'll make me feel a little bit more alert and a little bit more energized. I could never do the carb-free thing because I feel like if I do that or fasting, for me, just doesn't work. And the thing is, for me, if I did that, I would have no brain and I would be hangry. Nobody wants to sit near me if I'm doing that because I'm googly-brained and I'm just irritated. So for me, I think it is, for some people, the sweet potato is not a good plan. For, I think, soups and stews, like for spleen chi deficiency, obviously in Chinese medicine, those are easy recommendations for us. I'm like, what do you like that are soups, stews, slow cooked meals? We have so many options, pressure cooked meals, the Instant Pot, if you want to do a fast cook. I would do slow cooker meals often where I'd throw a bunch of stuff in there and walk away. So easy, right? And as I mentioned, I don't like to cook. So this is the kind of thing that would be easy to cook and nourish the spleen. And then especially if it's in the colder months, and even if it's in the summer, if you're doing it in a slow cooker or pressure cooker, it's not going to heat up your kitchen.
I love that because I always think of spleen chi deficiency is your digestive system is weak, like you were a newborn baby or you're a young baby. So what do we do with baby? First, of course, it's mother's milk. But when we start feeding them, it's baby food, which is basically all mushed for you. So when you said sweet potato, I'm like, that's the first thing you could give to a baby is, okay, a mashed banana, a mashed sweet potato. And with sweet potato, I could see when you were talking about the carbs, I could see a great breakfast. You have a couple of eggs with a sweet potato and cinnamon over it. And you got the protein that balanced the carbs and you have fiber. And this is beautiful. Like it's a beautiful, nourishing breakfast for the spleen and it's warm and that works perfectly.
So for a lot of people, the kanji is just you cook the rice extra and you add things in. When I was growing up, and I have this in the book, if we were sick, my mom would make something called ochazuke. So my mom is Japanese Canadian third generation. So I'm half fourth generation Japanese Canadian. And ochazuke is rice with green tea. And then sometimes you add a little bit of a protein or a plum or something like that to it. And that was like, I still think of that as my comfort food.
Yeah, I could see that. I've seen online a lot of people saying, I don't understand why I'm supposed to not eat rice or carbs because people in Asia all have rice and they're okay with it. I think it's just because in North America, people have been used to have so much carbohydrate that they're telling them that basically, okay, stop it so you don't have to go over it because everybody eats popcorn and chips and whatever it is, burgers and cereals, and it's just carbs. In Chinese medicine, it's a lot of it is sweet food, right? It's all sweet. this cheese is sweet and the burger, the meat is sweet and the bread is sweet and they have sweet cookies and the cereal that is sweet. And it's okay. So where's the other flavors like sour and bitter and balancing with other things? So I think that's what's missing. Maybe that's why they go one way or the other instead of just making it more balanced. I think that could be why. So in your book, you have a few recipes and you don't cook. So they got to be simple recipes.
Super simple. Yes, that was really my focus. The recipes that I've offered are super simple. They are things that if I can do it, anybody can do it. And when I look at a recipe, my decision on whether or not I'm going to try it is often the first thing I look at is how many ingredients. If it's got 24 ingredients, it isn't going to happen for me. I'm not going to do it. And I also look at, I think about how long is that going to take? How much hands-on time? Because most recipes, when they put the hands-on time, I'm like, it takes me 3 times longer than that recipe said it was supposed to take because I'm not a chef. I'm not going to chop those vegetables so quickly. So the emphasis for me was easy. Now, that does mean that sometimes it is more like teas, and I do include smoothies in there, but it's suitable for the condition. So I put things in there that I thought you could also modify, where if you don't have that ingredient, you can swap out something different. Or you're bored with that ingredient, you can add in something different.
That's a great idea, because it's true that I'm the same as you. I look, and if there's more than 6 ingredients, you lost me. I'm done, like, already. And especially when you start with ingredients that the first 3, I don't even know where you buy or what it is.
Yes.
I'm like, what is that? I don't even know where to buy or what it is. So you lost me. But if you're telling me, okay, you're putting a sweet potato with bone broth and whatever, you're putting things, I'm like, okay, I can put that and some rosemary in there. Good. I can do this. So I appreciate you making it simple, because I think a lot of us are not chef. To start with, my dad was a chef. So my mom never cooked a day in her life because he was a chef until he passed away. And so if you love it, this is great. But not everybody is like that. I really appreciate you being here on the show and coming to share all your wisdom and your knowledge. And I would love for you to have a final thought for everybody that's listening when it comes to modern Chinese medicine food cures.
I think for me, the key takeaway point, like if I'm going to summarize it, you said it earlier in the podcast, is the mindfulness part. So the paying attention to how you feel when you eat. So for me, the mindfulness part of practicing nutrition is really important. That means that as you're preparing your food, as you're choosing what to eat, you're thinking, what am I feeding? So there's times where you're feeding, your goal with that meal or that food is to help support healing your body. There's times where it's to provide some comfort. There's times where it feels like just reward. So just being mindful of what am I feeding as I'm having this and fully enjoying it so that I don't feel guilty if I'm having a piece of cake. Right now, I'm enjoying the celebration that goes along with that cake. That's why I'm choosing to eat this particular thing. So the mindfulness practice of why am I eating this? You don't just scarf down the food and then you've forgotten about it. You have the bites, you taste the flavor, you feel the texture, you get the emotion with it, because food comes with feelings and emotions too, and memories. So you get all of those benefits from it if you slow it down. And then when you slow it down, you're also more likely to chew more. And if you chew more, digestion starts in the mouth. It means that whatever it is that you're having, even if you're having a raw salad on a cold day, if you chew it extra, you're increasing the surface area of that food. So when it hits the rest of the digestive system, it's easier for the body to handle it. That's my main takeaway, is the opportunity to be mindful with your eating and enjoy it, because it should be fun. It should be enjoyable. That is one of the key pieces with food. And if you aren't enjoying it, and then get help with finding somebody who can help you figure out how to interpret the healthy food choices into things that you actually want to eat and enjoy eating.
I love food. So the joy of food, you speak to me. I grew up, my dad was a chef. And like I said, it's just good food makes me happy. And it's social. You with friends, you have good food, you enjoy, be mindful, enjoy, chew your food. Don't gobble it while you're walking down the street running for the bus. That's just the last thing we need to do. So I appreciate you and the last piece of wisdom you shared. Thank you so much, Dr. Cara, for coming on the show.
I'll add one more thing in case it's helpful or in case it's useful.
Please.
Throughout the book, with that idea of food should be enjoyable and joyful, I try to infuse humor in there. because for me, I want people to be interested in reading and learning. And if it reads like a textbook, then it's going to be boring. It's going to be great reading before sleep, but it's not necessarily going to be things that you're going to incorporate into your life. I hope that people enjoy the approach that I've taken of trying to infuse a little bit of lightness and humor. And my favorite sections that for writing in the book were about some of the stories behind food, some of the history. The flavor section for me was my favorite part to write.
That's so cool. Thank you. Yes, it's all about enjoying, having fun, and putting some lightness into it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for spending your time with me today. I truly hope you benefited from this episode, and I would love for you to share it with a friend that may benefit from it as well. Follow the show, leave a review, and if you want more, go to my website, acupuncturacademy.com. I have tons of resources there with treatment protocols, case studies, free courses, and so much more. And connect with me on all social media at acupuncturacademy. I'm on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, X, Pinterest, and LinkedIn and TikTok. And no matter what, keep rocking it using TCM. Please listen to the disclaimer, because the AcuPro Show podcast and material shared through AcuPro Academy, which is a subdivision of Natural Health Sense Incorporated, are designed solely for educational and entertainment purposes. The utilization of information from this podcast or any associated material is at the user's discretion and risk. This content is not meant to replace the guidance of an acupuncturist, Chinese medicine doctor, medical doctor, physician, or any qualified professional, nor is it a substitute for proper diagnosis or treatment. Users are strongly advised not to ignore or postpone seeking medical advice for any existing medical condition with their healthcare professional regarding any health concerns.